Is everyone enjoying or has enjoyed their breakfast? Let's give a round of applause for the staff.
You're so cute.
Of course I am.
You're my cutie.
Yep, I'm Flo's cutie pie.
You're my cutie.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and get started with the programming, but staff will be around if you need something. So we're going to start with our first part of philosophy over breakfast. You got to hear last night about what it means to be a member of the National Federation of the Blind. So now you'll get to find out what is the National Federation of the Blind. And this discussion will be led by Patty Chang, Director of Outreach at the National Federation of the Blind and Second Vice President of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, and Kevin Worley, Manager of Project Literacy, National Federation of the Blind of Colorado, and our national rep for this convention, Patty and Kevin.
Good morning, everybody. Kevin, are you with me? You got a mic?
No.
All right. Well, we're going to need you to add a mic because we're recording. I think you got one in front of you. So we'll let Kevin find a mic. I am very excited to be asked to do this. I think about our philosophy quite a bit, partly because I help to edit some of our national newsletters. And I read a lot of what President Riccobono writes multiple times. And I urge you to do the same, because every time I read one of his speeches, I feel like you've peeled an onion, you get more out of it. So we have a series of questions here. And do we have a mic runner?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Dustin.
I do have a mic, Patty.
Awesome. Yeah, we definitely need the mic. We are recording for posterity.
You know, I do have to say, you know what they used to say about me and Scott LaBarre? The most dangerous place in the room between us and a microphone, so.
This is true.
Yeah.
So for those of you who are relatively new, you might not know, we don't do the raise the hand thing, because I can't see you, Kevin
can't
see
you.
So you call out your name, and then we will get you a mic. Please remember to speak on the mics. It does help people who don't hear well. It also keeps the recording straight. So without further ado, I'm going to throw out the first question, and it is an important one. What is the most important word in our name? Denise. Wait for Mike.
Yeah, Denise. Come on, Denise.
Well, you know it's early in the morning. What can I say? Of?
Ooh.
Okay, now tell me why.
Because we are an organization of blind people. We speak for ourselves. Many organizations are for, and they are folks who claim to represent us.
Perfect. Almost exactly what I wrote down. Who are our leaders? Next question. Who are our leaders? Ellen, and wait for Mike.
Here you go, Ellen.
The people the membership elects.
The people the membership elect.
Good.
That's true.
Good.
What else can you tell us about our leaders? It's in every one of our constitutions, except for divisions like the parents of blind children. So that might give you a clue. Anybody else?
That they're blind.
We are the blind leading the blind. That is not a bad thing for us. We are the blind leading the blind. So our constitutions, most of them say something like, the president and vice president and a majority of the board must be blind. Now, the next question is why? Debbie Pittman.
Debbie.
All right. Got a mic?
Who better to lead the blind than those that live that life of being blind?
Good.
Yes, perfect. The authentic experience of blindness means that we lead in a way that is different. And I would add on a personal level that I think it's important because there's so much in society that tells us we have to be followers.
And that doesn't mean that we don't have some amazing sighted folks, spouses, friends who are active in the organization. We do, and some of them take leadership, but they're not the people who walk in our shoes. We have folks, I think, who you would actually call blind at heart, and we've known some of them. Mrs. Jernigan. My wife, Bridget, of 25 years, who passed away a couple years ago, she's one of those people who just naturally, I don't think she ever asked me a question about blindness, ever. She just showed up, and we started dating, and there was never, she understood her role in the outfit. She was a great, great, great active member, but she wasn't a blind person. So we have wonderful allies, supporters, and those people who are just naturally sort of blind at heart. They get it, almost like a blind person.
Well, two people come to mind in particular in Illinois, my husband, Francisco, and we have a sighted member on our board. I think there's only one right now, and it's Bridget Burke.
Yeah. Yay! Yeah. She can't sing, but, you know.
That's okay. I can't sing either. You don't want me to sing. What do we mean when we use the word blind? This is a little harder. Denise, go for it.
So we are not just talking about a number on the eye chart. You have, you know, people who have no vision whatsoever, people who have low vision, or people who are functionally blind. And those are the people who need some accommodation to perform a major daily activity, such as reading, for example, or who needs to make some, you know, serious adjustments.
So we have members who probably don't qualify for some government benefits that are tied to the legal definition of blindness. And I think that Glenn either was or is one of those people, but still functionally needs to adapt. So we use a functional definition of blindness. And that when we say blind, we always mean blind and low vision, but we use the word blind because it's all encompassing and we want to stress that it's not a bad thing.
But I also think we don't want to get hung up on blind as the only descriptor. We're right. The National Federation of the Blind. I have no trouble in my discourse with people saying blind and low vision. Because if you don't, you often put people off. And I want to welcome people into, we're a big tent. And it's not in our name because, again, functional blindness, if you're total, if you meet the statutory definition, if you're functionally blind, in our view, in the National Federation of the Blind, you're blind. That said, I don't want to lose some senior citizen who doesn't understand they're blind. They use different services. They use the tools and techniques of blindness. They're blind or, in my view, low vision. They're welcome, this organization. And I'm not going to get hung up on the whole notion of the semantics of visually impaired, low vision. We're the National Federation of the Blind. If you have low vision, call yourself that if you want. Call yourself blind. We're pretty proud of the word blind. We think it's a fine descriptor of who we all are, depending, regardless of our level of vision.
You know, Kevin, that's especially important because way back when I joined the National Federation of the Blind, one of the things that I found difficult was I really thought of myself as visually impaired. And I couldn't quite make that jump.
Yeah.
And so it was off-putting. I'm glad you said that.
Well, thank you, Patty. I occasionally will come up with a pearl of wisdom.
Oh, the key is I rarely admit it.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one's a little broader. Who are we? Who are we as the National Federation of the Blind? Kathy? Wait for a mic, please.
I'm coming. Where are you, Catherine? Oh, okay. On the other side. I'm coming.
There you are. We are the National Federation of the Blind. It's our family. It's really a family. We love each other. It's so great we get together. I get to see you guys once, twice a year, being a snowbird and being in Illinois and Florida, and an old retired duffer who gets to go do these things. But we are a family of blind people, meaning all areas of blindness. And I keep saying, as I always have said, I wish I had known us when I was a little kid and had grown up reading Braille and print at the same time. It would have been easy to do. I learned that a little late, like in my 30s. So we're a family. We're a wonderful family of, and we love each other, and we're great.
And this question actually has multiple answers. So we're a family. Who are we? Anybody else want to chime in? I'm sorry, I didn't hear who that was.
Eileen.
Thank
okay,
you.
We're the biggest advocacy blind group in the USA.
And maybe
and
in
the world. Maybe in the world, yeah.
That is true. One of the things that I wrote down is membership and advocacy organization. Membership-driven advocacy organization.
We speak for ourselves. We're an organization that speaks for blind people because we are elected leaders who participate actively in the efforts and activities of this National Federation of the Blind. What else? Others, comments about who
yeah,
we
do
are?
Others want to chime in?
I always remember on picket lines, we back in the day when we would picket more than we do nowadays, and we used to have to picket an outfit called NAC and the Department of Education and Social Security Administration. And
Airlines.
And oh, yeah. And people would always start a chant that we are the NFB. And I think that said it all. We are the NFB in many ways. And I think of us more as a community than a family. I think there's a little distinction there. Sometimes family can be off-putting to people because they're, for some people, it implies some sort of pressure. And so although I feel like we're a family, I mean, just like Kathy, I mean, I love Kathy. I see her once every couple of years, and I've known her since 1984, me and Kathy and Steve Estalas, we went to a leadership seminar together called the Apologetic Seminar. And it's a wonder how these seminars get their names, but we were very sorry. And so you know, to me, we're a community of people who are active in different ways. There are some people who don't go to chapter meetings that much, and we would love to see them every month. But there are some people who their activity is maybe making large donations, or they're blind people. They love us. They've read the literature. They come to conventions, but maybe they provide services or an engagement in another way. And I only say this because there was a time years ago when if you didn't do everything according to Hoyle, there's a term you don't hear much anymore, you were considered sort of persona non grata. But that's not the case. We want people involved at various levels of the organization. And if you're a scientist living in Decatur, you're probably not going to get to too many chapter meetings. That doesn't mean you can't role model for our kids how to be scientists. There probably aren't too many scientists in Decatur, but there might be a couple. They're in Champaign-Urbana, yes.
That's right.
I think I heard Ronza.
Yes.
Hello, oh, Ronza.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. We are a transformative organization, and we are the blind people's movement. And so what all that means is we hold government and private industry and other blindness entities, entities that are supposed to be serving the blind or providing services for the blind, accountable. We move them forward so that they're actually responsive to our needs instead of what they think we need or the custodial viewpoints that those entities tend to have. And we are also the oldest consumer organization in this country. We're 83 years old.
Yeah.
Aren't we 84 in next month?
Yep.
Yeah. November.
Good. Ronza, thank you for bringing that up, because one of the favorite things that I hear that we often say is that we transform dreams into reality. I believe that's the case, and I'll talk about it a little bit tonight, but I do believe that the Federation has been transformative in my life, and I think we, the NFB, have been transformative in thousands of lives and hundreds that I know of. You know, I think about my son Nijat, who we adopted from Azerbaijan. If he didn't have the NFB when he was 11 years old, who would have raised him in what we see, what I call it, my house, Bridget and I call the boot camp for the blind. I mean, yeah, you know, he probably would have been, if he'd have stayed in Azerbaijan, he'd have been sitting on a back porch somewhere with really no opportunity. And now he's finished law school and he works in DC. So if this organization didn't transform his life, thank you. Yeah. He did it in spite of me. You know, but that we're a transformative organization, as Ronza says, in the lives of so, so many people, including most of us in this room, I think.
Kevin, who are we?
We are the NFB.
What is our purpose is the next question on my list. What is our purpose?
What's our poipus?
Debbie Pittman.
Debbie.
There you go.
To improve the lives of blind people through advocacy.
Good.
That's a good, concise statement. We improve the lives of blind people. Now, I'm going to dig a little deeper. How do we do that? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Other ideas. How
other,
do we?
Other ideas.
You again?
I heard Stein.
Stein and Avant.
And Avant. Thanks.
Who am I looking for? Stein?
Okay. Debbie Stein.
Okay, there we go.
One of the ways we improve the lives of blind people is by raising blind people's expectations.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's true for me. I say quite often that I love to come to conventions, and I like to go to Baltimore. And part of the reason I do that is because every time I go, I learn something, or I see someone who pushes my envelope, meaning maybe I had decided I couldn't use this particular app, and I see Gary Wunder use it. Mobility is a big one, because there are lots of people that have really good mobility that are at our conventions in Baltimore, and every time I go, I learn and push myself to do better.
And I think we typically do that through role modeling rather than pressure. You know, we don't want to be an organization that sits around and judges people. Let me tell you a quick story. I was with Dr. Maurer, the immediate past president of the National Federation of the Blind, and one of the thought leaders in this nation, not really, more than blindness, other things as well, if you get to know him really well. At any rate, we were in New York. We were trying to get some money to build something. I don't know, NFB Journeying Institute. And this wealthy fella took us to dinner. It was a steakhouse, and I wanted to order a certain size steak. And I don't cut meat well. It's something I don't do well. It's just something I've never been able to do very well. And I was sort of hesitant. And Dr. Maurer somehow picked up on that. He said, Kev, he said, why don't you order that steak? I'm like, I don't know. Tell him, cut it up in the kitchen. I thought, really? Dr. Maurer thinks you. So I said, I'll have that 32-ounce porterhouse over there. And then I said, could you cut it up in the kitchen? So am I saying blind people can't cut meat? No. What I'm saying is I, as a blind person, I'm not confident in that skill. And I have no longer a problem saying, I don't usually eat steak much anymore, but if I want one, I will say, you know, could you cut that in the kitchen for me? So I think we need to live the lives that we want. Have you heard that before? And I think we need to not worry if we're not perfect. However, having some expectations that are different than most sighted people have for us, that is important, but not in a judgy, put down way. And there used to be a time 40 years ago, and Steve's over there and Kathy's over there, where there was this sort of belligerent attitude. You don't, if you can't do it this way, you're not really one of us. That's simply not the case. We want you no matter where you are in your journey.
Patty?
Yes, Denise.
So the other answer that I was going to add is that we advocate through our collective action.
Here, here.
So
collective action. Yes.
For example, Washington Seminar is one of the ways where we come to Washington the last week of January and meet with our representatives to, as Barbara Pierce puts it, to do blind people's business through federal legislation. And of course, in our various state legislatures as well, and our city governments.
This next one's a little hard. We say we imagine a world where blind people can live as valued and respected members of society. Where does that statement come from? Denise.
I did. Okay, there you go. So it is now a statement in our strategic plan.
It is. It's the aspirational statement. Now they wanted us to have a vision statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And President Riccobono said, "I don't know that we want a vision statement. How about an aspirational statement?"
I love it.
So that is our aspirational statement. I'm going to read it one more time. We imagine a world where blind people can live as valued and respected members of society.
And by the way, I have I serve on some corporate boards, and I have brought this notion of an aspirational statement rather than a vision statement to some of the corporate boards, a couple of corporate boards, and they love it. And so we have changed. We've already started changing it because now we have an aspirational statement. I've always wondered why blindness organizations or blindness agencies always feel compelled to have vision in their title, Envision America or Lighthouse or look, yeah. Are you guys ashamed of blind people? Why can't you use blind in your names? It's always rubbed me the wrong way, I'll tell you.
Yeah, Kevin, the Guild for the Blind here is now called Second Sense, and it always has rubbed me the wrong way.
What, Second Sense?
Second Sense.
Huh.
That was kind of my reaction.
Huh. I don't know. Right. I don't even know what that means.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I don't know what it means. So I thought, are there any questions that people would like to ask first? And then we will recite our one-minute message together. Is there anything that people would like to ask in relation to what it means to be the National Federation of the Blind?
Old guy over there in the corner by the door.
I didn't hear.
Flute, the flute player. Wasn't that great, you guys? Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And let's close by together saying our one-minute message.
Wait, I think Steve.
Okay.
Kevin, you want to lead it?
No, Steve had a comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Steve.
Yeah.
I thought you were kidding.
The Federation, I had concurrently during my undergraduate days in college a couple political science courses, and around that time I started reading a lot of Braille Monitor articles also. And, you know, if somebody told me early on in my undergraduate days, you know, you will go to the state capitol and you will make a presentation in before the House Human Resources Committee. And unfortunately, the bill that we supported didn't pass that session. It was a bill to expand the Fair Employment Practices Commission to include people with disabilities, to include blind people. Then the next session, we got that bill passed, and then a couple sessions later, we got the bill. We expanded the Fair Employment Practices Commission to the Illinois Human Rights Commission. And if somebody told me, you know, when I first joined the Federation, you will go to the state capitol, you will go to our nation's capitol, you will make testimony, you will meet elected officials, I would have said, what? You know,
The Federation builds confidence in ways that are beyond our wildest imaginations, but it's really incredible.
The Federation builds confidence.
Well, and
anybody else before we close?
Well, and that's why we started our centers. You know, our three centers, because boot camp for the blind is at my house, yes. But the centers aren't so much boot camps for the blind as much as they used to be. They are a little bit, but we're really an attitude factory. I like to think of us that way. We help build, as Steve says, positive attitudes around blindness and low vision. And we teach skills, absolutely, because you have to have some skills if you want to have that confidence. You know, the more you can do things that you didn't do before, the more you'll do more things that you didn't do before.
For sure. Anybody else want the floor before we do a one-minute message? Pittman.
She wants to lead the one-minute message.
Well, she could do that.
I just wanted to say an aspiration is a vision. It's just that it specifies that it's more toward working toward it, and it's basically for any organization, an aspiration is a vision, is the same thing as a vision, and it's workable with us because it still shows we have a way that we're going toward as a united front.
All right.
Debbie, do you want to do the one-minute message, or you want to kick it back to Kevin? Okay.
Yeah, come on, Debbie. Patty.
I'm ready when you are, my friend.
Hey. Well, let's start us off, Patty Chang.
All right, everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
The National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines me or my future. Every day we raise expectations because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.
I always, when I do it, I always get dreams and future mixed up. I say it wrong every time.
Oh, no, that's why you didn't want me to lead it. Now I know.
Yeah, I know. That's why I wanted you to lead it, because I always transpose dreams and future.
Any
I used to do the same
words,
thing
Kevin?
With the pledge. I would get until I realized it was alphabetical. I would get the policies and programs. I would get that all messed up. Final words, Patty. Patty asked. Wow, you guys know it all.
All right. Thank you, guys. I hope this was helpful.
Thanks, you guys. Love you, cats. All right, what did I do?
What's up?
All right, thank you, Kevin and Patty, for that great discussion about what is the National Federation of the Blind. I get that question so often. I get a lot of people who say, well, I'm not blind, so I can't come to the convention, or I'm not blind, so I can't be a member. So I thought, especially with our theme of rooted in philosophy, it was important to talk about what is the National Federation of the Blind. And I'm glad someone asked the question, you know, is this being recorded, because they want to share it with other people so that they know what the National Federation of the Blind is and why they want to be involved with the National Federation of the Blind. So thank you all. Our next philosophy discussion is going to be led by one Sarah Luna, who is second vice president of the National Association of Blind Students and vice president of the Illinois Association of Blind Students. Sarah, take it away.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. Wow, I certainly got a tough act to follow, but I will try my best. So y'all, we're going to talk about canes, and I'm pretty excited. So You know, one of the things that the student divisions are known for is we're known for bringing the energy. So I'm going to start off with a brief informal survey, if you will. So my first question for everyone is, those of you in the room who use a cane, I'd like y'all to make some noise for me. Sweet, sweet. All right. Those of you who use a folding cane, make some noise. All right, all right. Those of you who use a straight cane, make some noise. Oh, okay, okay. Interesting, very interesting. And you know, I don't want to leave out my guide dog users, so where are my guide dog users at? Yeah, okay, okay. I mean, hey, like, a telescoping cane is not a folding cane. Oh, my bad. Okay, fair point. Do we got any telescoping cane people here? Yeah, okay. Whipping out the telescoping cane. Okay. You're right. My apologies. I did not mean to exclude you, telescoping cane squad. So, no, I hope my mic runner's ready, because my first, like, deep question for y'all is, what does the white cane mean to you? Okay.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
So, I believe.
I will start paying attention now.
Thank you. I believe we're going to start with Kathy, and then we're going to go to Kevin.
Kathy, can you say where you are again?
Oh, perfect. It's lucky when that happens like that. So, yeah, once again, the question is, what does the white cane mean to you?
Cane. Oh, okay, guys. I needed a cane long before I had one in my hand. Thank God for white canes. What would we ever do without them? I love them. I use straight cane, folding cane, telescoping cane. I even use a 50-50 occasionally. Now, it's amazing when you haven't picked up a 50-50 in a long time and have it in your junk cane, you know, in the back of your cane holder. Pick up 50-50 sometime, put it together, and actually use it. You'll be shocked as to, darn thing doesn't do too bad for $10, you know. You can buy them from me at National Convention if you really want one. I sell canes whenever they let me for 5 hours at a stretch, you know, at National Convention. It's like buying your most important pair of shoes or something, you know, that's really important. So I love selling canes to people. It's really fun, isn't it, Steve? Steve and I sometimes get to sell canes together.
That's a friendship right there.
Yeah, that's right. We go way back.
Awesome.
He helped initiate me into this outfit. So I'm very lucky. So I love all kinds of canes. I have a telescopic. It's not my favorite. My favorite is either a straight or a folding cane. I love both.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. I believe Kevin was next, and then we'll go to Pittman.
So actually, I didn't have a comment, but you know, I will say this. I'm a guide dog user who carries with me a cane all the time. There are things that the guide dog doesn't show me, and I still like to know a little about my environment. So I carry a micro cane, one of our micro canes at the National Center. It fits in my pocket really nice. And if I come up to something, I'm like, I hear something. I wonder what that is. Whip out the cane, go, oh yeah, wall. Okay, good.
Oh, wow. I never considered that. Thank you so much. I believe we're going to Debbie Pittman next.
Can you make some noise? Thank you.
And then we're going to go to Charlie after Debbie.
Thank you. A cane means independence. Nobody can keep you from going where you want to go if you have a cane or a guide dog.
Fantastic. Very concise. I've noticed this about Debbie. She's really good at being concise. I respect it. So was it Charlie? Okay. Yes.
I'd even go a little bit further and say adventure.
Ooh, adventure. I like that. And I believe Patty is next. Yes.
I think it's a badge. I appreciate the identification when I'm out in public. And bear with me for a second, because I forgot to make an announcement this morning. All of our meals are non-pork. So you got bacon, but it's turkey bacon. There will be no pork in any of our meals.
Would anyone else like to answer the question of what does the white cane mean to you before we move on? Was there somebody before Mary? Emmy. And then Mary.
Emmy right here.
All right.
Is it on? Do we have
and then Steve will be our last person for this question.
I avoided using a cane for so long, not because I wasn't proud of who I was, but because I struggled with internalized ableism for so long. Mm-hmm. But once I had it in my hand, it was like the world opened up to me. And it felt like this just rushing feeling of independence and confidence. And instead of walking in a way that like makes me feel insecure or fearful, I could walk in stride with confidence and know where I'm going. I'm often told when I'm out in public that I walk faster and with more confidence than sighted people do, which I find is a funny comment every time. Mm-hmm. But my cane is just a part of me. It's become such a staple to me that it almost feels like a companion in a way. So it definitely has opened up the world to myself.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We're definitely going to elaborate on that topic later.
Oh, thank you.
Mary, I believe, was next. That was Emmy.
Oh,
yes.
Also known as Emily.
Mary, I believe you're next.
Okay, my experience is that a little different because I've had what I call recreational vision all my life, which is blue sky and green grass and all that kind of stuff, but not necessarily good for a lot of other things. When I first came into the NFB, I was very fortunate to have a couple of mentors that unfortunately aren't around, but there are a few that still are. And one of them, the first thing she did was give me a straight cane. And I said, oh, well, you know, can I maybe have a folding cane, please? You know, she goes, no, you're going to use this first. And I said, why? You know, she said, because you're really, you know, you're going to be tempted just to, you know, fold it up when we're not around and stuff like that. So here, you take this so that, you know, you're not folding your blindness away. Hey. And you know, and this was really a good experience for me because I really was dealing with, you know, the issue right then and there and for a long time. And then quite a while later, then I did get myself a folding cane, but I understood later why, you know, she was so insistent about this, because I probably would have done exactly what she said I would have done. So that's my cane story.
Thank you so much, Mary. I believe Steve was seeking the floor.
Where are you, Steve?
Yes, ma'am. And then we will transition questions. So Steve, what does the white cane mean to you?
Steve? Where? Steve? Amazing. I was close.
But no cigar.
It means self-confidence and independence. Before I used the cane, I had to slide my foot along the border between the concrete and the grass, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid that I would slip my foot down the space between the platform and a train car on Chicago's elevated train system that we call the L. And once I had a cane in my hand, everything just kind of felt so easy. And it just works. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve. I believe Kathy had a comment.
Thanks. I did exactly what Mary said not to do. Okay? I got a folding cane to go to McMurray, to cross State Street and College Avenue. Those are two streets I worried about crossing without anything. So I had a folding cane that I could then fold up, put my blindness away, because I was a partially sighted college student, okay? I was one of those people. So nobody gave me a straight cane and said, you have to use this first. Whoever that is, that was a wonderful thing that you were told. Love that. All canes are wonderful, but I think starting out with a long, straight, white cane is the best. I didn't do that, but I think that's what is wonderful to do.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everybody, very much.
Thank you. Okay. I very much love the topic that we have been getting on how your perceptions of the white cane has changed throughout your life. So that was actually my next question. So y'all are doing my job for me. So would anyone else like to elaborate on how their perceptions of using a white cane has changed throughout their life? Ellen, and who else was? I heard another voice too. Alec? So we're going to go with Ellen and then Alec.
Hi.
Hi.
So I have a folding cane.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have two. And a white cane.
He has a straight cane.
Got
too.
Two folding canes. That's great.
Two folding canes and a white cane.
Oh, and a white cane? Oh, are your folding canes colorful?
Because I went to Braille's camp.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Thank you so much.
Ellen? Amazing. I would also like to say something eventually.
Oh, of course you could say something, Madam Mic Runner.
Hello. Oh, I like hearing from one of our Bell students that we had this summer.
Yay. Yeah.
And I like a lot of you. Like when I was younger, I had a lot more functional vision. And the first time I had a cane, they told me I had to use it at school when we went outside on the playground because we had to cross the parking lot, but I didn't have to use it inside the school building or bring it home. And it's like, okay. And then I was with my family and they didn't tell me that we were walking down steps and I couldn't see them because it was sunny out. I fell down the steps and I sprained my ankle. And then after that, like, I'll never walk in without my cane again.
Well, I hope the lesson to carry a cane wasn't so physically painful for a lot of other people in the room. Olivia, did you want to say something?
I would love to say something.
Of course.
Similar to Ellen, I also was told to use my cane in school. This was my senior year of high school, okay? I'm done being a student. I want to go to college. Like, I'm done. And I have my vision teacher come in now. I didn't get services all of growing up. That's important to the story. So now, senior year of high school, they're like, you got to use this cane. And I'm over here being like, well, I went 18 years without any help. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And I also was like, it was a big stressor to me because, like, okay, now I'm in my school hallways, which, like, I grew up with the people around me, and now they're seeing me with, like, a white cane. I was like, that's just, like, major. Like, that's just screaming, I have a disability. And, like, I just, like, wasn't, what's the word? I wasn't prepared to, like, deal with that. Or, like, at least to me, I always grew up with, like, a negative notion of blindness. So I was like, well, I don't want to be that person. And then I went to college freshman orientation, and I didn't use my cane because I didn't want to be the blind one. But then I ran into a glass door, so that was really fun. And I was like, maybe. As I have grown older, I've learned to realize that the cane is not a symbol of like weakness or like targeting you, that you are disabled. It's more of like a, hey, this is a tool that helps me, but also it helps other people around you kind of like understand. Like, to me, if I ask for extra help, a person's gonna be more willing if I have like my mobility aid with me than just like not having anything. At least that's what I think. So yeah, as I've grown older, I've noticed that the cane isn't more like negative to me, it's more positive, and now it helps me be independent. But I do have a dog now, so that's a little different. But I use the cane when I don't have the dog. That is all.
Well said. Yes, we're gonna go to Denise.
Denise, amazing.
Okay, so the National Federation of the Blind, we have what's called an Early Explorers Program. For very young children, parents can order white canes for, you know, three-year-olds to start to at least get it in their hand. They may not be professionals or anything like that, but it gets people used to having a cane in their hand that should have a cane. I bring that up because it's not always about being embarrassed or feeling yourself a target. A lot of times, because if you went to school at a certain time in the 70s and 80s, they wouldn't give us canes until it was time for us to travel on public transportation. And then when they gave it to you, if you had some kind of usable vision, the way it got explained is, okay, this is for the driver of the bus to know he should call your stops. You make sure you have it when you cross the street, because if you get hit, it's going to be your fault, because how would the driver know? And I think President Riccobono put it best in his presidential release earlier this month. It wasn't necessarily about being embarrassed. It's just that we didn't know what to do with the cane. We didn't know, for those of us who had some usable vision growing up, we didn't understand blindness back then, and we didn't understand the importance of always having the cane available and what independence it would create if we knew how to use it properly.
Yes, thank you. Oh, okay, you're going to go with David Meyer and then Ellen, and then we're going to move on to our next question.
Actually, I guess I have a couple of comments. I'm old, so some of these comments may not be terribly relevant today, but maybe they are. Two things that I think of with the idea of having a cane. I guess the first would be to actually look a little more presentable than you might otherwise. The second would be less in the way of physical pain. Let me try to explain this. I went to a residential school for the blind, and we, I think, probably prided ourselves in getting around the campus without canes. Nobody used one. But almost every day, you had at least one collision where somebody was, well, you were walking fast and somebody was walking maybe faster in the opposite direction, and you banged into each other. By the way, most of the time you didn't say excuse me either. It taught us language that the Ten Commandments forbid us from using. The other thing that I can remember was when I graduated from high school and went to a traditional rehabilitation center. They used to use what they called indoor protective techniques. I don't know if any of you guys remember what they were. It was where you would literally crook your elbow, bring it up to about face level,
what?
And have it as a shield in front of you so that you did sort of protect a part of your body. I'm not sure how much of my body I protected. I can tell you that when I tried to use those techniques, I felt like an absolute idiot. Walking with an arm in front of my face, walking with a crooked elbow, first of all, it meant that I didn't have the use of one of my hands. Secondly, I felt very conspicuous, even in places where they were all blind people walking. I just felt really conspicuous. And the use of a cane, though it causes more, it may cause conspicuous for some of us, cause some of us to be feel conspicuous, does not necessarily. It minimized that feeling for me, because I didn't have to walk around. This is literally how one would hold their arm. For anybody who you can see.
See, I never heard of this technique. So thank you so much for teaching us something, Dave. And I'm glad that you adopted a cane. So in the interest of time, we're going to move on to our next question. Well, yes, because you are very concise, ma'am.
Where are you again?
That technique that Dave is talking about, when I learned it, it was only supposed to be used in close areas for safety reasons. You weren't supposed to just walk around like that in general, just like if you were in a close area to keep from hurting yourself, from bumping into something.
Thank you for that context. Thank you very much for that context, Debbie. So my last question is, so at the beginning of this whole thing, I asked, you know, I surveyed y'all on what canes y'all use. And so I kind of wanted to know, what are your reasons for choosing the type of cane that you use, whether it be folding, straight, telescoping, 50-50, which I'd never heard of before? Yeah, exactly. If you are a multi-type of cane user, I would like to know your reasons. Yes, Patty, then Denise.
I'm right here.
So I've been yelling out the point that for me it's not a choice. I think I have 14 canes at my house at least.
Respect.
One
ma'am.
Of them's a 50-50 that I never use. I've been saving it in case somebody like Dustin comes over and needs a cane. I just outed you, Dustin. Or Syed Yusufuddin calls me, he's at the airport and just broke his because I'm closest to the airport. That's happened several times. But different canes are better for different situations. So when I go to Belize, for example, I will take a straight cane that has a lot of flexibility. Why? Because we're going to a tropical island and walking a lot in the sand. I will also take a folding cane because sometimes laying the straight cane out where people might fall over it seems not worth it to me. I do have telescoping canes. I keep that. That's often my extra cane in my purse or the car, just in case I break one. So I don't think it's an either or for many of us. A straight cane to me is the best way to travel and get a good echo. But sometimes I don't want to deal with the fact that it's 63 inches long.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patty. I believe Debbie was,
Denise
was next. My apologies.
So I think I mainly own folding canes. It's only recent that I've bought a straight cane. And I have several blind friends who admit that the straight cane generally gives you better feedback, but even they use a folding cane. The main reason is because you can fold it up and get it out of the way when you are in public spaces. So for example, when I'm in church, I fold it up. A lot of times people will kick your cane, they will pick it up, and you know, because it's a curiosity for some people, just like they invade our personal space, they'll come and, you know, so I in order for me to keep control of the cane and know where it is at all times, that's really why I use a folding cane, even though I know just from talking to other blind people that a straight cane will give me probably more feedback.
Thank you so much. Okay, so we're gonna go to Josh, just because to hear from somebody new, and we are running out of time. So, in the interest of hearing different voices.
Yeah, I personally use a decane just because it was what I was trained with at Blind Ink, and like Denise said, it does have more tactile feedback. I am a very tall individual, so my cane is also very tall, but I'm 6'3". So, I mean, but I managed to make it work. I do see where other people are coming from when they say sometimes it can be hard to store, but that tactile feedback and the fact that I was trained with it, like, overcomes that aspect of it.
Thank you. We have time for one more concise comment. Does anyone have a concise comment? Yes, different weights of canes is important. So yes, I will just conclude by thanking all of you for taking part in this discussion. I know that using the decision of whether or not to use a cane and our perceptions of using a cane definitely changes throughout our lives. Many of us perhaps didn't use a cane when we were younger and then grew into using a cane and went back and forth on it and then perhaps tried out different canes and realized that different canes were best for different situations. And I believe, like, ultimately, like, you have the freedom to try out different canes, see what works best for you and your lifestyle. So if you predominantly use the folding cane throughout your life, I would encourage you to try a straight cane or a telescoping cane, same with vice versa, just to, you know, to try things out. And hey, if you don't like it, well, then at least you tried. Once again, thank you all so much for taking part in this discussion. I really appreciate y'all sharing and your vulnerability, and thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Sarah, for that great conversation, that candid conversation on canes. So we're at the end of our philosophy discussion of the morning.